And now to a Janesville farm and how to reduce the impact of agriculture practices on climate change. Farmers are critical in the work of slashing greenhouse gases in the U.S. Agriculture in our country accounts for more than 10.5% of planet warming greenhouse gas emissions. And those are estimates from the Agriculture Department. Are you a farmer? Have you changed your practices to try to be more environmentally sustainable? What have you done? Join in 800-642-1234. Willie Hughes is a sixth-generation farmer in Janesville. His family runs W. Hughes Farms and Blue Farm Chips with 5,000 acres. Willie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, take us on a tour, if you will. Show us around a bit the farm. Tell us about it.
Yeah, sure. You said it correctly. We are operating today about 5,000 acres in Rock County here, the primarily southwestern part of the county. And today we are a parallel production specialty crop operation, meaning about just under 2,000 acres are managed as certified organic, and the rest is generally food grade, conventional non-GMO. We have in the last couple of years really, ventured inward and tried to tackle what it means to be a benchmark for a sustainable operation in the 21st century. We're incorporating a lot of cover crops. We're extending our rotations. We're doing a lot of no-till and collaborating with other ag adjacent institutions in the area to kind of move that flag forward.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering if you ever think about how, your grandparents farmed on that land and, how different the practices today are versus, when things started around 170 or so years ago.
Yeah. Well, what I wouldn't give to be able to have a conversation with them. Certainly things have changed. I'm a little envious that, they might not have had some of the big questions to answer. They weren't necessarily burdened by that, but they certainly had, other challenges that that I haven't experienced. So, there's give and take, but as I kind of think more about it and examine what I'm doing, I find more and more of, a sense of sort of returning more towards, the direction they were headed. So, it's fun to think about. I've got some old family photos, and one example is my great great grandma Maud grew industrial hemp for the war effort in the fiber. And this is our third year raising industrial hemp, and that's had its challenges and stuff. But it sure looks from the photos that she really knew how to grow a crop. So I'd like to pick her brain.
Oh, it's like a family heirloom crop, if you will.
Yeah.
Why did your family start growing organic decades ago?
Originally it was not by choice. That was just the way things were done. But in about 1991, my dad identified the opportunities for the market, and we sort of ventured into certified organic, which is, it's its own thing. And, so we've been at it for, just about 30 years now. And, we're still learning as we go. We still have room for improvement. But I really feel that, we've learned a lot from that experience, and the approaches and the practices are really cross-pollinating with our conventional side of the business in a way. And we're incorporating, more cover cropping on our conventional acres. No-till on the conventional side is a little more straightforward. And that certainly I feel does have a spot too, in climate mitigation. We've been at that for about 30 years.
We're going to get to cover crops in a moment, but I want to ask you, there's been this tension around getting the certified organic label. And, farmers have said it's incredibly difficult to get the certification, obeying all regulations for several years, paying fees for those years before using the organic label. What are the barriers you see, or what have you learned?
Well, I think that's generally correct. You know, there's always two sides to that argument. One is it's prohibitive for small growers, you know, to have access to those markets. The other side of it is that those high standards set, you know, those standards are set so that the consumer has confidence that what they're getting is legitimate. And so that's always the question. And I think as the organic industry grows and becomes a larger and larger share of, you know, the food that consumers are buying, that, you know, that there's always going to be that push and pull between those two. I can tell you from experience that yes, you know, maintaining the standards and being able to do the audit is very time consuming. It's, you know, it can be costly to, you know, just clean out logs and transaction certificates. And it's a whole thing. And I feel personally from my experience that that is a good thing. I understand that it could be prohibitive for growers, but I think at the end of the day, the consumer has to have that trust in the organic label and strict standards are the only way that that'll happen.
Strict standards there for a reason. I want to give you this hypothetical. Let's say you're a larger crop operation where you haven't necessarily had a great rotation of crops for a long time. You haven't been building up that soil health or paying real close attention to soil health. What advice do you have for a farmer who wants to transition to organic but is really struggling with changing their operations and getting that certification process going?
I would say that the first step is to work with cover crops. I think that is some really low hanging fruit where you can begin to, you know, improve your soil structure, improve your organic matter, reduce runoff. I don't know if the organic certification is for every farm. I mean, it's definitely, a tough thing. But extending your rotation, implementing cover crops, finding specialized markets, finding customers that value that value-added product. That's all where it starts.
Willie Hughes with us, his family. They've been farming in Rock County for more than 170 years. We're learning about his practices on the farm to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Do you grow crops or work on a farm? Have you changed your practices recently to try to be more environmentally sustainable? Tell us about what you've done, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Willie Hughes here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about One Farm's approach to sustainability. The Hughes Farm has been working the land for over 170 years. They've been certified organic, as we've been talking about, for 30 years. Cover crops, rotations, heating, lighting, irrigation, runoff control, all in the mix. We're looking at their farming practices and what the future holds in the face of climate change. What questions do you have for a working farmer and the operational challenges in this climate crisis? 800-642-1234. Farmer Willie Hughes is with us for about 9 more minutes. You know, you're talking there about cover crops, and, you know, that is one way that you're trying to lessen the impact of the farming operations. Explain what are cover crops and how they help.
Yeah, absolutely. A cover crop or continuous living cover is really anything that is planted typically in the late summer or fall that grows really for the sole purpose of, you know, putting roots down in the soil and covering that soil for that period of the year where the field is not productive. Obviously, having roots and a canopy of some sort prevents wind and water erosion. It can slow runoff. It can increase organic matter, and it can improve the recycling of that organic matter, which can contribute to carbon sequestration. As that organic matter builds slowly over time, you're going to see improved soil structure, moisture, and nutrient holding capacity. You're going to have improved biological activity in the soil. it can also be referred to as a catch crop. So what we're doing now typically is we're currently laying compost and animal-based manures out and then putting a cover crop over those in order to catch that and immobilize those nutrients so they stay out of the groundwater and out of the out of the streams and rivers. And then in the fall, we will plow those down or terminate them and plant into them. You can grow nitrogen with things like clover or hairy vetch. So there's different, different cover crops have different uses. We typically will plant clover after a small grain in the summer or frost seed it right into the small grain in the early winter. And that's going to fixate nitrogen into the soil that gives us a nitrogen credit for the following year. So when you look at fertilizer prices today and how a cost of production has increased, using cover crops to grow nitrogen is something that I think a lot of growers are looking at more and more.
With your
go ahead.
I was just going to jump in with your cereal rye as a cover crop. Are there any issues with cereal rye because, tying up nitrogen that is needed for the early corn growth? Have you had any issues there with that nitrogen?
You can have tie up. Absolutely. It's important to get, that cover crop worked down in a timely manner so that you don't have that issue. But yes, if you plow up a cover crop field and plan on planting it the next day, you will definitely have some tie up. One of the things that we do to mitigate that is the use of biological amendments. So we're putting liquid products in furrow. You could essentially refer to it maybe as like a glorified compost tea. The specific product we use is called CX1 by Purple Cow. And adding biology with minerals means that uptake occurs more readily. And having that biology helps the plant. The biology essentially attaches to the plant, right? And it converts it, mineralizes, and makes those nutrients available to the plant. And in exchange, the plant gives the microbes root exudates, sugars, and so there's a symbiotic relationship there, and we feel that by putting that in furrow, that's one thing that we can do to help kind of kickstart that process.
You've been also experimenting with weed control and with electricity to control weeds. What are you doing there?
It's a little bit of a kind of a mad scientist approach, but. We have a tool called the Weed Zapper, and it probably gets more attention than most of the pieces of steel on the farm. But essentially, to kind of explain it to the listeners, you might see a sprayer go down a field and it's got a really long boom in front of it. Well, instead of a herbicide, this is essentially a giant copper conductive rod, and it works just basically on a height differential. So you set the position of that rod, and anything that's taller than that gets electrocuted. On the back of the tractor, there's about a 200,000 watt generator pushing 15,000 volts, 400 to 500 amps when it's really going.
And it
sends a shock of electricity. Obviously the weed makes ground with the contact ground and sends the electricity right through it and bursts the cell walls. And it has its challenges. It's not as effective as a herbicide pass. The more woody the stem, the more hollow the stem, the less effective. So and then also weeds that are shorter, there's multiple passes involved because they have to grow up above the canopy. But in terms of reducing the seed bank for next year, and in terms of, some of the, resistance we're seeing, especially like ragweeds and some of our non-GMO food beans and things like that, it's a pretty handy rescue tool.
That's fascinating. We're talking with Willie Hughes, sixth generation farmer in Janesville, looking at environmentally sustainable practices on the farm. With your questions, 800-642-1234. Willie, I want to talk about Blue Farm chips because, full disclosure, my kids eat them. They love them.
All right.
Can you, you know, blue corn is commonly grown in the Southwest, and your family, mm-hmm. I understand, shifted to some blue corn production in the 80s when no one was growing it. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I can tell you that we're still at it. We've had, growing a specialty food corn in our area is a challenge. We do feel that we've identified a varietal that works fairly well. We have some this year, and we'll be harvesting it here pretty soon. It's a longer day corn. It's really not meant to be grown this far north, but we farm primarily on some sandier, more marginal ground, frankly, and that more arid environment, we seem to be able to get away with it. Especially the last few years, it seems to be fairly well adapted to our area. We grow the corn, and we have it cleaned locally, and the chips are made down in South Beloit, just about 10 miles from our farm.
Wow. How do you protect your crops from neighboring farms that use pesticides then?
Well, that's always a challenge. You really can't tell other growers how to farm or what to do. We have some great relationships. We have great neighbors, and they always know when we call that we're up to something, goofy. And so we try to stagger plant dates. Pollination timing is really critical to make sure that you don't have speckled corn or anything like that. Isolation, a staple of organic management is a buffer. So if we're adjacent to a conventional field, we have to harvest a buffer and haul that in as conventional.
Well, Willie, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your operations.
Thank you.
Willie Hughes is a sixth-generation farmer in Janesville. His family runs W. Hughes Farms and Blue Farm Chips with 5,000 acres. Just ahead, we hear from a University of Toronto researcher who studies chemicals in clothing. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.